Here I am. My guest is electrifying. His name is Stephen Schwartz, and we're talking about water. Actually, consciousness and water. If you have a relevant question, we've sure had a lot of good fast blast questions. If you have something you'd like to ask in person, we are at your disposal. Those are the numbers, the conduits to Stephen Schwartz coming right up. If there's better talk radio, I have no idea where you're going to find it. Stephen, welcome back. Are you ready for the audience?
Sure.
All right, then here they come. First time caller line, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Good evening, Art and Stephen Schwartz.
Hi.
Art, I know I wanted to make a comment and a quick question, please. If I could just say, I had someone shared some DMT with me one time, and it was in a very lit environment. And the spirit, during that experience, had conveyed to me that light wasn't unique and that water was unique. And I never understood what that might have meant. And then a few weeks ago, you had that crop circle researcher on, and he was indicating how that the crop's formations seem to be drawn towards these underwater aquifers.
That's right.
And I just can't help wonder if, with Dr. Hameroff indicating the quantum realm that maybe the DMT allowed you to explore, for water to be relevant there.
It does come together, buddy. There's no question about it. Do you have a question?
I just wanted to ask Dr. Schwartz if he kind of thought that there was a mental component to all of these observational experiences.
I'm not sure I quite understand your question. A mental component in what way? Can you unpack that a little bit for me?
Okay. If we have our brain allows us to observe or even cause possibly the effects with those healers doing their healing, I just can't help wonder if, like, say, with the crop circle phenomena, is there a chance that there's something that's at the core of our existence, and if water is in all of us and seems to be at the core of life, if through our brain and the water, are we trying to communicate something to ourselves?
Okay. Well, I'm not sure that therapeutic intention or these consciousness effects, the brain obviously plays a role in this, but this is not, so far as we know yet, anyway. Now, subsequent research may change this, but we have not isolated a part of the brain that is particularly involved with non-local consciousness, although there has been some research that was done by researchers I can't think of the name right now, but in any case, who have discovered a part of the brain that fires off using MRI, when people have insights. And insights, I think, are very closely related to intuitional insights as well. So it may be that there is a particular function of the brain, but this aspect of non-local consciousness, I'm not sure that this is in the brain. I think that, for instance, if you look at the near-death research or the various kinds of survival research or the reincarnational research that's been done by Dr. Ian Stevenson and Dr. Jim Tucker at the University of Virginia, you will see that for these kinds of phenomena to exist, there must be some aspect of us which survives, which is not linked just to the body. And that non-local aspect of ourselves may indeed be linked with all other, I think it is, with all other organisms. As I said earlier tonight, the research to me is saying that all consciousness is interlinked and interdependent, from the single-celled organism all the way up to the high-order mammals. And I say that because research has shown the ability of people through intention alone to affect the growth of plants, the breakup of blood cells, the growth of cell colonies. I mean, almost everything you can think of, people have tried successfully. That's the point, successfully. And so it's possible that, I mean, crops, all sorts of things, also have water, and that it may be that this linkage is stimulated through some manipulation of the water. That's possible. I mean, that's pure speculation. We don't know that yet. But that's why this kind of research is important to do.
Okay, good enough. First-time caller line, Paul in New Jersey. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hi.
Hi, Art. It's a pleasure to talk to you. First-time caller, long-time listener. It's an honor. Stephen, your guest is very interesting. My basic question was sort of what the last caller asked, but I'd like a more specific AIDS, HIV, hepatitis, all these diseases coming out recently, the increase in cancer rates. Could that have anything to do with, like, the lessened water quality with the glaciers melting, maybe something like that?
Well, there's no question that pollution in water, I mean, Art and I were describing earlier what's happening, for instance, to fish and mussels and oysters who are exposed to the pollutants. And if the fish and the oysters and the crabs are being affected, the people that drink the water from those water sources, I mean, they're being affected as well. So there's no question that pollution in our water is causing effects on our systems, just as we can see these same effects occurring in fish and crabs and even in birds whose shells don't form properly, for instance. So there's a great deal of evidence that suggests that the purity of water has a very strong effect on the health and well-being of the creatures who partake of that water.
All right. Heather in Seattle, Washington, you're on with Stephen Schwartz.
Hi. I have a very serious water retention problem. I've been to medical doctors. I've been to herbal specialists. And I have two questions. I want to know, one, is it possible that my thoughts are creating this problem? And two, if they are, and they're kind of like subconscious beliefs, what can I do to help myself?
Well, I don't want, you know, it's very hard. It's very tempting to make these one-to-one linkages of, If I do this, I get this. I think it's much more complex than that. However, I would suggest this to you, just to see what happens. Put a little pad of paper and a pencil next to your bed and say to yourself every night when you go to bed, tonight I'm going to have a dream which I will understand that will give me insight on my water retention problem. And you just ask yourself, you may have to do it every night, might have to do it for a dozen nights. Probably not, but you might. And write down, even if it's a single word in the morning, that whatever you remember, if it's just as much as a word, and you do keep doing that, and you will open a dialogue with your own unconscious that may provide some very useful information to you.
All right.
You know, famous scientists have used, Robert Louis Stevenson used to say that the gremlins of his mind gave him his stories. Jonas Salk is on record as saying that he considered sleep and dreams to be one of his principal research techniques.
All right. Wildcard line three, Kim in Canada somewhere. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Good evening. Yeah, Kim from Edmonton. Art, I come bearing comment and question.
Okay.
And excellent work, Stefan, I guess it is, right?
Yep.
Right. Just a little, quick little background. I'm currently studying biophotonics, homeopathy, and electrosonic water programming. And first, quick comment. Just wanted to alleviate some fear. There's no real need to war on water. Just so people know out there, if they want to invest in something, atmospheric water condensers are an excellent thing to put in your house, and they're available now.
Yes,
I have a question about memory and organs, the memory and the organ transplant. Seth, and this leads to the question, Seth mentions, along with some masters, but Seth mentions that it's stored in the cellular membrane. And, okay, here's the question, which comes kind of from Seth. I wanted to ask you if you had looked into spiritual material for answers to some of your questions, and to lead off from that, because one of them was the healing action you're not sure about. And some of our physics would describe it as spintronic interaction, which is why it's hard to measure, because that needs charge-blocking devices. But that is something that Seth even talks about, past healing effects, and I noticed you talked about that. So, again, the question, have you studied spiritual material matters? You might want to look into Seth.
I actually knew Jane Roberts, and I have read the Seth material and the Bailey material and the Casey material and the Steiner material and lots of it. Yes, I have a very great respect for what I think of as the ethno-historical spiritual traditions of many people. I think there's only one mountain in town, and it's an illusion, so how you get up it is really largely a matter of personal taste. That's one thing. The other thing I wanted to say was that the Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency has just given a rather large grant to a company that called Agua Sciences, which pulls water out of air. And it'll do it in almost any climate, even in deserts. They're going to be using this in Iraq, if we end up still staying there, God forbid. But in any case, it may be that in the future the American household will have some kind of a device which is literally pulling the water out of the air.
Well, there's lots of questions about air quality, too. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hello. West of the Rockies, now or never. Yes, you. Yes.
How you doing? All right, my name is Michael. I live in Las Vegas. I'm listening to Stephen here tonight. Everything you said tonight, Stephen, is right on the money as far as I'm concerned. Ever since the advent of bottled water, I've been telling everybody I know that in the long run, I believe oil is not going to be the thing that's going to this earth. Water is going to be the thing.
Yeah.
I lived in Tacoma, Washington for 25 years. Year after year, Mount Rainier reputedly has the biggest snowfall anywhere else on the planet, besides the Himalayas maybe. And 2 years ago, I fly home. I see no snow on the Cascades. All the ski areas are closed. We are killing the planet, aren't we?
Yep.
I mean, we really are.
We are. Let me just give you just a couple of quickies. I mentioned Glacier National Park in Montana. But, for instance, think about Yosemite. 3.5 million people a year go out there. And the acreage, they now predict that because of drought and the drying of the forests as a result of the drought, that the acreage burn will rise by 50% in 2050. These fires that we see on television that just blaze away, we're going to see more and more of them. And Rainier, you're going to see the disappearance of snow. On Mount Kilimanjaro, they're now saying that perhaps in as little as 15 years, there will be no snow on Mount Kilimanjaro. So if you want to see it, you better go. Just like I said, if you want to see the glaciers in Montana, you better go out there because they're not going to be there much longer.
Okay. East of the Rockies, Brandon in North Carolina. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Art, good evening. Stephen, good evening. Your shows are just amazing, Art. I've been listening to you for about 4 months now. I work third shift security, and like a truck driver would say, it keeps me awake, and it's quality entertainment. Your guests are all mind-blowing. I just have a quick question for you. I'll let you get to the rest of your guests. As a form of control, mind control of water, as you're saying, I was thinking as a different form of manipulation towards people who can move objects with their minds, such as levitation. Could you use water in your body as a form of manipulation to maybe create levitation in your own self?
The levitation part I don't know about. Can you affect the structure of the water in your own body? Yes, I believe that that is part of what happens in the healing process. And I think we're going to get a much deeper insight into that as we go along. The levitation part, that I can't comment on because I don't know anything about it.
Okay. Wild card line from Illinois. You're on the air.
Hello, Art, and how are you tonight?
Just fine.
Good question. The weather in the central United States, basically near Oswego, Illinois, or west of Chicago here, it's just been unusually, and I mean unbelievably wet. I talked to you about 8 weeks ago. I told you we've had more water here than we've ever had on record. And now it's continuing. I mean, this is supposed to be the dry season up until about November. We're supposed to, that's when the rain's supposed to start. It's getting bad. My question is, does he see it coming even worse? And
well,
I'll take the answer off the air. Thank you.
The kinds of things that I have been talking about tonight, all of these things are based in research. I don't really have a lot of speculation.
Yeah, you're not a weatherman.
I'm not a weatherman, but what I will tell you is this. The models that have been done suggest that some parts of the United States are going to become much wetter, and other parts, the Southwest, for instance, are going to become much, much drier. And we already have a significant drought going on in large parts of the West. So there are going to be places that are going to be much wetter and warmer. And some of the climatologists and hydrologists who are looking at these issues believe that the northern states are going to become in weather very much like the central states are now. The central states will become like the southern states, and the southern states on the East Coast will become sort of subtropical, much more like Latin America, I guess, parts of, and that, of course, as the water rises, that parts of Florida, I mean, if you go to the University of Arizona, there's a website that they've got where you can actually see models of the what the advancing rising water is going to be like, and you can see that by the time you get to the 21 feet that they're talking about, which is some, I mean, centuries away, although I will say that they originally said it'll be 1,000 years before this happens. Now, then they said it'll be 500 years, and now you see people talking about 200 and 300 years, so it isn't clear to me, I don't think it's clear to anybody exactly how fast this is coming, except that it is speeding up exponentially in ways that we had not anticipated. So
right.
It may be that you're going to be in a very wet area.
All right. Very quickly, maybe. Clay in Florida, you're on with Stephen Schwartz. Hello.
Hi. I've got a kind of a question scenario. If we have the dead zones in the oceans. Mm-hmm. Would it be possible to pump oxygen in like a big aquarium? And would this be a good reality check for the world since everybody's not paying attention to the problem?
Well, that is actually an interesting question. Of course, it's partly oxygen starvation, Stephen, that's causing these dead zones.
Right.
And I don't know, could you pump oxygen into
Interestingly enough, there are people who are beginning to think about what the emergency scenario is. And it's quite interesting. Paul Crutzen, for instance, who won the Nobel Prize in 1995 for his work on the ozone layer, is really the man that defined a great deal of what we know about the ozone layer, which is, by the way, bigger. It was supposed to be healing. It turns out it's actually gotten bigger, the hole. But he has now begun proposing that we release sulfur dust in the upper atmosphere because that will help reflect back the sunlight so that it will help ameliorate the global warming problem. So, I mean, it sounds preposterous, but it was based on the eruption of Mount Pinatubo that blew up in 91.
Sure.
And that spewed sulfur particles into the atmosphere and caused a reduction of temperature. So there are people, it was about a half a degree centigrade. So, I mean, it's not a small, I mean, you know, it's a small but significant difference. There are now people that are talking about things like pumping oxygen into the water.
All right, Stephen, hold it right there. We're at the bottom of the hour. Preposterous, possibly, but so are the magnitude of the problems. I'm Art Bell, coming to you from a country where they turn back time. Hi, everybody. Stephen Schwartz is my guest, and what a program this has been. It's been all about water. You wouldn't think it'd be hot stuff, as they say, but it certainly has been, hasn't it? Hey, listen, if you would like to contact me, there's a way to do that, thanks to the internet. I'm Art Bell at mindspring.com. That's A-R-T, B-E-L-L, at Mindspring, M-I-N-D-S-P-R-I-N-G, mindspring.com, or, well, conversely, ArtBell at AOL.com. Both of them will work. Mindspring has a slightly larger capacity for messages, so I suggest that one. Stephen Schwartz has a book. You might want to read all about it, as they say. We'll talk about that in a moment. Once again, Stephen Schwartz. Stephen, you have a book out right now, right?
No, it's about to come out.
About to come out. Okay.
Yes, Opening to the Infinite, which talks about what I know about non-local consciousness and also teaches you that protocols for remote viewing, including intuitive diagnosis and healing. And I also have a series of DVDs called The Gold Standard Course, which not only presents my material, but also the material of every founder, or essentially every founder, from Ingo Swann to Hal Puthoff, Russell Targ, that are all put together in one unified course that will teach remote viewing in all of its aspects, so that people who have interest in healing or people who have interest in how it relates to religion or how it relates to physics can all get information on this. So,
okay, and the name of the book?
The book is called Opening to the Infinite, and the DVDs are called The Gold Standard Course.
How soon for the book?
The book will be out in about 5 to 6 weeks. We're planning a launch in January, and so, in fact, I'm going to be back on your show sometime in January to talk about it, and I think it will answer a lot of the questions that people have been asking, because I've spent a lot of time, I've rewritten this book several times, trying to keep accommodating this idea of non-local consciousness and that some part of us is outside of time-space.
All right. West of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hello.
Hi, Art. Hi, Stephen. This is Eric calling from Espiritu, California. I had a quick comment I'd like to make about something he made much earlier in the show.
Sure.
About consciousness being interconnected and interdependent.
Yes.
If that's the case, individual consciousness would have to survive death, because if they're all interconnected, losing one would lose all of it.
Well, that's actually an interesting thought. I hadn't thought of it that way, but clearly there is this, you know, Jung called it the collective unconscious. In Asia, they talk about the Akashic Record. The Egyptians had a concept of this collective idea. Clearly, all consciousnesses seem to be interlinked and interdependent. I mean, if you think about it, how does an archetype get created? You know, we talk about Joseph Campbell's The Hero of a Thousand Faces. Well, how do these archetypes get created? They get created because of thousands and thousands of individual acts of awareness and observation in a focused state, and we all come to recognize them. That's why they're archetypes.
Okay. East of the Rockies, conserving time, JK in Texas. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Steve, let me throw three terms at you. Have you studied Fisteria and its involvement with red tide and confined animal feedlot operations?
I am aware of the red tide stuff. I have certainly read a number of research papers on it, and I know about the confined animal problem. I'm not quite sure which aspect of it you're talking about.
Red tide is caused too much animal chemical. I mean,
that's right. Too much animal
chemicals in animal waste. Are you familiar with Fisteria? Fisteria.
Ah, Fisteria. I'm sorry, I misunderstood you.
Fisteria. Artie, you ever heard of it?
Yes.
Yes, I have.
Fisteria. Okay, it happened in North Carolina. It caused some red tide. That's you ought to be concerned with the incidence of that.
Well, it's kind of part of the larger picture.
Huh? Well, see, what's happening, there's too many hogs and chickens growing in the United States. There's a problem of disposing with all the manure from these animals. And they had an international conference at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, Arkansas, a few years ago, talking about what to do with all this chicken litter, as they call it, chicken manure. What to do with it? You can only use about 2 tons per acre per year, and how to dispose of it. It's getting in our water systems and causing red tide and pollution, over nitrating the water.
Killing the Chesapeake Bay.
Yeah, I'm absolutely aware of it, and it's part of a bigger picture that we've been talking, exactly what we've been talking about, right, Stephen?
That's right. Precisely this. I mean, I live on the Chesapeake Bay, and there's a whole plume of the bay that has been killed off because of the intense farming operations, animal husbandry, chicken husbandry, along the rivers that feed into the Chesapeake Bay. It's just awful.
Andy in Los Angeles, you're on with Stephen Schwartz.
Hi, Art. Hi, Stephen. Hope you're having a great day. Stephen, have you ever heard of an inventor from Austria by the name of Johann Grander, who received a major award from the Soviet Academy of Sciences for his energy stick, which has been sold throughout the world and would take regular water, or what you would call dead water, from a dead zone, and put life back into it and create living water? Have you ever heard of Johann Grander?
I have heard the name, and I've had a conversation once with somebody, but no, I don't have any specific knowledge about him.
Okay, briefly, what they found was that people who had various ailments of different types, who took water in whatever the respective country and treated it with these energy sticks, many of them had phenomenal healings take place, where their health was restored, and where doctors gave them no hope. And I hope that if you get a chance, you check that name, Johann Grander. He would be up in years right now. I don't know if he's still alive, but his energy stick was being sold in Los Angeles as recently as the last 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
Well, I will look into it, and I thank you.
Okay. Let's see how many we can get through here. First-time caller line, David from California. You're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Yeah, hi, Art. Great program. I'm all about water. Just a comment and then a question about the conference. But the comment had to do with earlier this evening, you had a gentleman that asked the question, could you cure the oceans? And Stephen's response was, that's a great question. Let's look in, or we should look into it. And I'd like to point out that Masaru Emoto and an international group of people had gathered at Fujiwara Dam, which was a polluted reservoir, lake, something of that nature. And I guess, Steve, you're familiar with what Masaru Emoto does?
Yes, absolutely. In fact, Dean Radin, who's just replicated his work, will be speaking at my conference.
Right. So... you know that the tangible manifestation is the crystalline structure.
Right.
So what they found was that they took a sample of water before their blessing, and this was a group of people who gathered together, an international group actually, who got together and blessed the water at this dam. And they took a sample before the blessing and a sample after the blessing. And if you do a quick search for Message of Water or Masaru Emoto or whatever, you can find the pictures of those crystalline structures. And before the blessing, it was aqueous mass of nothingness. And after the blessing, it was this beautiful crystal that we would think that a snowflake would look like, or that purity of water would look like. So I just wanted to make that comment, and maybe, you know, in your pursuit, you could follow up with perhaps what they're doing.
No, I think he's very, very intimately familiar with that work, right?
Yes, Stephen? I'm quite familiar. The problem that the Emoto work has always had is that Emoto, not being a scientist in a traditional sense, his research didn't have the kind of careful controls. But Dean Radin, who's up at Noetics Institute in Petaluma, California, has done a replication of his work with Omoto's cooperation, in which they had 2,000 people focus what beautiful thoughts is the way it's described by Omoto, and then they looked at the difference between control crystals done with control water and the crystals that were produced from the water that was the focus of the treatment, and that water was in a sealed what's called a Faraday cage, a kind of structure that filters out all electromagnetic radiation, but extreme low frequency, and the water looked more beautiful, the crystals of the treated water, than the control samples. And this is really the first independent validation of the Omoto work. And Dean is going to be presenting the paper explaining this for the first time at the conference in November.
Okay. Marina in Lake Forest, California asks if any of your experiments involved or compared distilled water.
Yes. We used in the healing experiment that I described, and by the way, that paper, infrared changes in the infrared spectra in water proximate to the palms of therapeutic practitioners. I'm sorry, it's a research paper. People who go to my personal website, which is on the Coast to Coast website, can download that paper. That water was triple distilled, bacterially static, hermetically sealed water.
Okay. Wildcard Line 4 from Salt Lake City, Utah. Max, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Hello, Trey. What you said earlier about the ozone hole is actually getting bigger. I'm looking at the NASA website right now, and it's shrinking on schedule. It's about average. But it had its peak on September 30th.
Well, I will tell you. Hold on. Let me see. I'll give you the reference if I can get to it quickly enough. Or you can write me. Why don't you do that, and I'll send you the latest reference that I've got.
Yeah, I've got a good map up there right now. Very recent map up there at the moment. On the international line, Clark, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Stephen.
Yes.
Or a couple of points quickly. The glaciers on the western slope of the Canadian Rockies are growing, and the ones on the eastern side, they're shrinking.
That's right.
Other thing, we did a lot of study and looked at a lot of Tibetan practices, and one practice that jumped out at us was by meditation, a certain meditation, that you could somehow affect the structure or the very nature of matter. Now that you have mindfulness, beautiful thoughts, prayer, intention, are they not similar mind forms that might indicate that, you know, non-locality of consciousness within ourselves might indicate that we're kind of part of, we have a pan-dimension beyond ourselves?
Yes.
And that when you look at matter being essentially breaking down our molecules, breaking down atoms, breaking down atomic particles, that we end up with information and energy and how they're organized. Can we not, maybe through resonance of our minds, affect that?
Well, I mean, the research would suggest that we can. The point that you made in the early part of your question about the various different ways this is described is the point I was trying to make earlier this evening, in which I said, you know, there are a lot of ways of describing this, and each spiritual teaching develops its own way of expressing this. And what's interesting to me is if you look across all of them, you can see that it's the same concept, only people at different times, coming from different cultures, focused on different aspects of it, each have their own way of describing it, but it is the same thing. The Tibetan meditation techniques that you're talking about are very similar to other kinds of techniques that have developed in other cultures, and Native Americans have a tradition of this. The Hopi have a tradition about this. There are shamanic traditions that come out of Latin America about this. We are all seeing the same stuff. That's the thing, is that people have these experiences, and they depend on their vocabulary to try to express what they've seen, and their vocabulary is structured by their culture. And if the culture is different, then the language is different. But it is all the same kind of perception.
All right. East of the Rockies, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hi.
Hello? Art?
Dave? Yes.
Yeah. Hey, this is great. Hey, I really miss the Dreamland and the harp music. My question is basically when he spoke about the sulfur sprinkling here in Wisconsin, basically right after they started burning the oil wells in Iraq during the Gulf War, we didn't really experience any type of a summer. It was cold and rainy here from April almost all the way to August till we finally got a regular part of our season, our summer. And I was just wondering maybe if the oil, the burning of the oil wells had anything to do with...
Well, Dave, you're kind of asking the wrong guy again. He's not a weatherman. So I'm just going to save that question from you unless you really want to answer it, Stephen.
Well, the only thing I would say is that there was a lot of discussion at the time of the 91 Iraq War about whether the burning of the oil wells, what their exact effect on the weather is. But I do note, and I mentioned the Mount Pinatubo explosion in 91, which reduced the temperature in the following year by about a half a degree centigrade.
Correct. Okay, west of the Rockies, Jerry in Arizona, you're on with Stephen Schwartz.
Yeah, how are you guys doing tonight?
Fine.
Doing good.
Okay. Listen, George Norrie had a gentleman on his program, and he had written a book, and the title had something to do with magic. And he had made some kind of a little motor or something, and he put it like a couple thousand miles apart, and I guess what this did, it would put some kind of energy into a room, and he was able to change the pH in water, which they tested over thousands of miles. I wondered if you heard anything about that.
Can you say a little more about that? I didn't quite have enough information to respond.
Yeah, they made some kind of a little motor or something where they would kind of put their consciousness into this motor, and then they set it all around the country. In fact, I think they even put it overseas, and they were able to concentrate on that, and that would send the signal to change the pH in water, and it didn't matter how far away it was.
Okay. I think...
No, I don't know about that.
Yeah, I think that it wouldn't matter whether the machine was there or not. I think what we've been talking about is consciousness and intention. So one can imagine it occurred that way, machine or no. Richmond, Virginia, you're on the air with Stephen Schwartz. Hi.
Okay, I just have to be brief.
Yes.
Two things to possibly be a solution. One is the prayer thing that you have done in the past. The law of unintentional consequences would not be a problem because all we're trying to do is reverse the and make it the bad stuff back into good the way nature had intended it. So that the bleaching of the coral, the dead spots, is a great big dead spot in the Chesapeake Bay, about 100 miles, I think it is. You're
all
familiar
right,
with that, Steve.
I'm sorry I've got to cut you off there. We're out of time. All of that is a possibility and something to think about. Stephen, we are out of time. It has been an incredible program. And, of course, we will have you back. As you mentioned, it's already planned. So thank you for being here, and you have a wonderful night, partner.
It was a pleasure to talk to you again, Art, and you have a great evening, and thanks for having me on as a guest.
Good night. All right, folks, that's it. What a program it was. What a last, I had 3 days, didn't I? It's been a long time since I had 3 days in a row from Manila in the Philippines, Southeast Asia. Good day to you all. Good night.